Game on, boyfriend.
Are you about to dispute my official ruling in the sacred tradition of nose goes?
Technically correct.
I should have known. She didn't like me. I don't think anybody likes you.
I like me.
With Tyler Bischoff.
Okay, the zone's not working. They're a little bit too good to cover man to man. And we can't shoot for shit.
On ESPN Las Vegas.
Hello, basketball cliche season. I told you last week, teams always win the third game, but yesterday we got Noah Robotham and Nick Blair telling us that it's hard to beat a team three times in one season. Marvin Menzies gave us a ton of variations of the one and done. So it's basketball cliche season. Kathy Olivier is going to join us a little bit later. She's the most fun coach to talk to on this campus. The Raiders miss out on Le'Veon Bell. We are at the Mountain West Tournament. We're at the Thomas and Mack on the concourse, 11 a.m. right when our show ends. Boise State and Colorado State are going to get the men's tournament started. Tonight, Boise State and Wyoming on the women's side are playing for the championship. The Boise State women have won the last two, and I think it's three of the last four. Meanwhile, on the men's side, it's been a different winner for five straight years. But since we're at the Thomas and Mack, Jared is going to be even worse at timing than usual because he's back in the studio, and it's going to be glorious. Just like that. Are you there, Jared?
What do you mean?
What?
I was perfect. All right. I don't think that joke landed.
It did. So we're going to start. We'll get to Kathy Olivier. I might give you some hacky Mountain West tournament predictions towards the end of the show. But we're going to start with the Mountain West coaches all-conference teams they put out yesterday. You ready for the outrage, Jared?
Yeah, sure.
Noah Robotham got snubbed, Jared, and you are not on board.
I guess the coach's poll is the one. So, yeah, no, I saw Grimala's ballot, and his made perfect sense to me.
All right, so the media has a ballot. It was out earlier this week. The coaches came out yesterday. There are three teams, and there is an honorable mention. On the media side, Robotham and Chris Clyburn both made the third team. But on the coach's side, Clyburn made the third team, and Robotham did not. He didn't even get named an honorable mention, which is pretty impressive by the coaching of the Mountain West to be complete morons, because Noah Robotham led the Mountain West in assists this year. He was the only player to average over 5 assists this season. He had 6.1. The next highest was 4.7. He was the only player to have over 100 assists in Mountain West play. He had 110. Next highest was 84. And of the five whole players that averaged 4 assists per game, he was the only one to be under 2 turnovers per game. So he was the number one assist man in the Mountain West, and all of the Mountain West coaches just deemed that basically irrelevant. And what I think is the funniest part about this is you'll hear it from coaches all the time. Like Marvin Menzies will say it, where players bring more to the game than just points, right? They can impact the game with more than just scoring. And like if you go back just through this year, Chris Clyburn has an 0-for-12 game. And Marvin Menzies goes on and on about how many rebounds he got in the game and how he impacted the game in other ways, even though he missed every single shot he took. And if you go back to...
Every single shot.
That's right. He did. He was 0-for-12, but he was LeBron James that day. But if you go back to the first game against Wyoming, Joel Tomboy had 31 points. And Marvin Menzies, in his post-game press conference, to paraphrase, he said, Joel's 31 points was not the story of the game. Their defense was the story of the game. And so you hear coaches all the time, and I'm picking on Marvin Menzies because that's the coach I cover, but you hear coaches all the time talk about how guys impact games in more than just points. And what's funny about the All-Mountain West selections is the coaches ultimately just pick the guys that scored the most points. Because if you look, every single player voted above Robotham had more points per game than Noah Robotham, but 11 of those 19 players that were voted above him had a worse effective field goal percentage, which is a fancy way to combine 2 and 3-point percentage so that it's equally weighted for threes. So basically, the Mountain West coaches just rewarded a bunch of guys that shot more than Noah Robotham. Like, that's what it came down to.
Hold on. And you said they didn't have an effective field goal percentage, so they didn't just reward people who scored more. They rewarded people who scored on worse shots?
Yeah, they rewarded inefficient players, is what it is. And so, like,
twos.
Every time you hear, like, coaches talk about guys impacting the game and without points. And anytime you hear them, like, talk down to people, because it doesn't happen all the time, but it'll happen where coaches will talk down to fans or media or whoever it is, where they're like, yeah, you know, you guys just look at the points. You guys want to focus on the points and all that stuff. They're all full of crap. They're all full of crap, because when they come to vote on their best players, they do it as simplistically as the most simple basketball fan does, and they look and say, oh, who's scored the most points? Oh, that's the best player on the team. Like, because that's what they did. That's basically how they decided who the All-Mountain West teams were this year. If you look at some of the players, I'll start with Chris Clyburn, because to me, the fact that they would, if they were going to vote one UNLV player, to me it's kind of ridiculous that they would pick Clyburn over Robotham, because I would guess if you asked Mountain West coaches to, like, give us their scouting reports on UNLV, I would bet every single one of them has slowing down Noah Robotham ahead of slowing down Chris Clyburn.
Well, and, you know, shutting down Nick Blair.
Yeah, that too. Nick Blair's never been on a scouting report in his life, and for some reason he scores 20 points against New Mexico, and still the other teams don't put him on the scouting report. But, like, if you think about the way Chris Clyburn scores, he is the leading scorer on this team, and he's been efficient. He's been consistent all year. But Clyburn doesn't create his own shot, hardly at all. They put him in the corner, and when other players draw a help side defender, draw double teams, Chris Clyburn gets an open shot. Like, just the Chris Clyburn cut that we've talked about so much this year. The reason that works is because Noah Robotham comes off a ball screen and draws Chris Clyburn's man to come help him. Like, Chris Clyburn, yeah, I'm dumping on Chris Clyburn when I don't mean to be, but Chris Clyburn, you know, he's got to have the right timing and he's got to finish off at the rim, but the reason that play's open, the reason that play works, is because Noah Robotham created it. And I would like to think that coaches who game plan against UNLV would realize, oh, Noah Robotham's the one creating these shots for Chris Clyburn. We should give him the credit, not Chris Clyburn. But they didn't. And I would venture to guess maybe that's why UNLV swept five opponents this year, because their scouting reports were terrible. But Clyburn is a secondary offensive option. Somebody else has to create it for him. And that somebody is often Noah Robotham. So just the fact, just on the teammate level, that it was Chris Clyburn instead of Robotham is just the coaches looking at points per game and voting for Chris Clyburn. And then if you jump outside of Clyburn, there's a couple of guys that Noah Robotham definitely should be over. But the biggest one to me is Anthony Mathis from New Mexico. Anthony Mathis did score 3.5 more points per game than Robotham. But Mathis averaged this season more turnovers than he did assists. Right, he had the same amount of rebounds as Robotham. He had less steals than Robotham, and he shot worse from three-point range and two-point range than Noah Robotham. And in the two games that UNLV played New Mexico, what were the big stories from that game? Why did UNLV win those games? It's because Noah Robotham face-guarded Anthony Mathis, and Anthony Mathis was useless. They couldn't figure out how to beat it.
Down.
Like, in head-to-head matchups, Noah Robotham was 10 times better than Anthony Mathis. I don't know how any Mountain West coach paid any attention to this season and thought Anthony Mathis was a better player than Noah Robotham. Like, it's impossible unless you just say, oh, he scored 3.5 more points per game. Yeah, he took 3 more shots per game, too. Like, it's the most simplistic way to look at basketball and determine who's the good player, and the coaches will yell at people all the time for doing it, and they're the ones that turn around and do that. So where's Justin Hudson at? Where's Fresno State's coach yelling about getting rid of the media poll? Let's get rid of the coaches poll. We have some audio because Noah Robotham. We talked to Noah Robotham yesterday. You think? Oh, good job, Jared. Leave it up to Jared for a day, and it's, I think. Talked to Noah Robotham yesterday, and we probably talked to him 10 minutes after the coaches' selections came out. So this was very fresh when we got to ask Noah Robotham about it.
I just saw it.
What do you think about it?
Don't care for it.
So you like the media team better?
Yeah, the media team's fine. You know, I've only, my whole life, I've only prioritized winning. Because when you're prioritizing winning, you know, there's no opinion in that. It's either you're a winner or you're not a winner. That's one thing I've always focused on since I was a little kid. And that's one thing I care about. Opinions are fine, and for some people they validate, for other people they don't. I'm focused on winning.
Your last game.
So that is Noah Robotham talking about not getting selected to any of the All-Mountain West teams. And it's a very Noah Robotham answer. I will say it's probably the most annoyed, I think is the right word to use, that we've seen Noah Robotham. Because he's tremendous to talk to. He will give you a detailed, in-depth answer on anything you ask him about. And when he was asked about the All-Mountain West teams, his first response was, I don't care for it. And then he did sort of turn into the Noah Robotham answer, but he was pretty annoyed. And it's probably even more so than after individual losses. Like, he was more annoyed with that. But I don't know. Is it so, Jared, where does complaining about the All-Mountain West third team rank in our hierarchy of what we cover? Like, is that better or worse than Las Vegas Lights being such a big part or Jake Bischoff being our favorite part?
I'm going to put it below both of those.
Below, okay, so it's less important than both of those.
The Lights have llama-based interactions. You can never have enough of those. And Jake Bischoff continues to be just our cross to bear.
What's the bigger snub? Noah Robotham not making All Mountain West third team, or Gerard Gallant never letting Jake Bischoff play?
Oh, it's Jake Bischoff without a doubt, because they had 20 games. What were you gonna do? Just let him on the ice. We were losing anyway.
Nope. Just think, they could have lost one more game and it would have been brutal, Jared.
Yeah, it would have made all the difference.
Their playoff position would have been completely ruined had they gone 7-12-1 instead of 8-11-1. All right, I do want to do a little bit more on UNLV. I'm going to steal some numbers from Mike Romala. He calculates the plus-minus for UNLV. And the individual plus-minus in Mountain West play only, Nick Blair led the team, plus-23
yeah.
for the season.
Great story.
Yeah, a walk-on comes out of nowhere, and he's the best player on the team. So what that means, by the way, if you're not aware of what plus-minus is, I should probably explain that.
Really?
We use it quite a bit.
Okay.
You think everybody knows?
I mean, if I know, never mind. You go ahead.
I mean, you listen to me talk all the time, so you should know a little bit more.
Wait, I'm supposed to be listening?
Sometimes. So basically all that means is in the minutes Nick Blair played, UNLV was 23 points better than their opponents. On the other side of that spectrum, Joel Tomboy was minus 53. So in the minutes Tomboy played in Mountain West play, they were outscored by 53 points. Not very great for Tomboy. And also not really helping my Robotham argument, as they were outscored by 22 when Noah Robotham was on the floor. What's actually weird is Robotham came in at minus 22. Clyburn came in at plus 19. Robotham played 628 minutes. Clyburn played 604 minutes. There's only 720 minutes in a Mountain West season. So, like, those two basically played the entire game, or entire games, and somehow there was a 41-point differential in their plus-minus. Like, I don't know how that even happened. Like, what crazy run was Clyburn on the bench for against Nevada or something? Like, I don't even know what caused that, because that's ridiculous. I figured those two guys would have almost identical plus-minuses because they play 35 to 38 minutes a game with each other the whole time. I don't know. But the one that's important is Mbaki Zhang. He was second. He was plus 1.8 points per 40 minutes this season. So if Mbaki Zhang played a whole game, UNLV was going to outscore their opponents by 2 points per game. And the reason I think Mbaki Zhang's the important one there is Robotham yesterday was asked about defensively, because the first matchup against San Diego State, Jalen McDaniels went for 30. The second matchup, they slowed him down. He still had a decent point total, but he took a lot of shots to get there. And Robotham said probably three times that Mbaki Zhang being on the floor was a huge difference, and that was sort of a big key to them just simply defending San Diego State, was having Mbaki Zhang on the floor. And the reason it's important is Mbaki Zhang's probably the only plus defender on this team. Like, Robotham will have some good matchups every now and then that he looks really good. Clyburn's, you know, average, maybe above average defender, but Zhang is the only one that continually makes impact plays, and mainly blocking shots at the rim. He defends the rim, not really in one-on-one situations, but if somebody else drives and gets beat, then Mbaki Zhang can be there to sort of clean it up. And so that's where I think he sort of comes, that's where his importance comes in, is that he helps UNLV not give up layups. Like, when they played Colorado State in that last game, the big reason that defensive performance was probably their best of the year is because they didn't give up very many layups, and Mbaki Zhang is the main reason for that. We're going to have Kathy Olivier join us. Oh, I know what I need to do. Before we get to Bischoff's briefs, Jared, I had to read you a tweet. This is from, I don't know how to say your last name, I'm sorry. This is from Rio something, who works for the RJ. So yesterday, Jared, you know we talked about so many personalized license plates in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
This is the tweet. Officer on a traffic stop running a plate. It's a Nevada personalized, I'm drunk. Ida Mary David Robert Union Nora King. Hashtag LV scanner.
Good God.
I'm surprised. Did DMV let you do that?
Yeah, I guess.
I thought they were very... I guess they're not that stringent. are they? But I feel like they'll shut things down, and I feel like I'm drunk would be... Or maybe they're just like, yeah, this guy's an idiot. We just need to let him do it so he gets pulled over all the time.
I mean, it is a good way to get pulled over.
I mean, if you're a cop and you see that, you have to pull him over, right?
Like, well, what seems to be the problem, officer? I suspect you might be drunk. Why would you think that?
We got to figure out. Yeah, I don't know if somebody tracks. We've got to figure out if Nevada has more personalized license plates than any state, or at least per capita than any state.
I looked this up yesterday. I believe they're fourth. It's
fourth?
Virginia.
What the hell
it.
Are they doing in Virginia?
Well, it's also per capita, so...
I guess, but it's not like Virginia doesn't have anybody in it. It's not Wyoming.
I was saying Nevada doesn't have actually that
many
people.
Okay,
I got
what you're going for. Yeah, okay. Oh, whatever. Technically correct. Brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Make sure you have the Be Connected Sports app downloaded. When you sign up for a new phone account, you can get $50 to wager. It is the Be Connected Sports app from Boyd Gaming.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
The Giants traded Odell Beckham to the Browns for a first-round pick, a third-round pick, and Jabril Peppers.
So in the context of the Antonio Brown trade, the Raiders gave up a third and a fifth. The Browns gave up a first, a third, and a player who was drafted in the first round in 2017.
I feel so bad for Jabril Peppers. I thought he was
right?
going to be good. But they always would make him line up in no man's land.
Like, so if the...
Go return some kicks, Jabril.
If the Raiders had given that up for Antonio Brown, it would have been, like, no thanks. And, like, the comparable would be, like, a first, a third... And I guess, like, Gary and Conley would be the comparable player. Maybe Carl Joseph is the comparable player. Neither one is, I don't think, as good as Jabril Peppers, but they're sort of a recent early round pick. But I think it's amazing. Like, it's just amazing to me that the Raiders only gave up a third and a fifth for Antonio Brown. Like, Odell Beckham's more valuable. I think he's, what, 5 years younger than Antonio Brown. So there's more value in just simply him being younger. But the difference between a first, a third, and Jabril Peppers and just a third and a fifth is amazing. Like, basically, in the last 6 months or whatever it's been, Amari Cooper and Antonio Brown, the combined haul for both of those guys is basically the same, or probably less, than what Odell Beckham went for. Because Cooper went for a first, Brown goes for a third and a fifth, so a first, a third, and a fifth, or a first, a third, and Jabril Peppers. Like, the Browns gave up more than, like, you could have traded conceivably for Amari Cooper and Antonio Brown for less than what the Browns gave up, which is kind of amazing. But I can't get over how little they gave up for Antonio Brown.
Locker room, you know, cancer.
I saw that about Odell Beckham yesterday, too. So I think anytime, if your team, your favorite team trades a good player, the go-to move as a fan is to call him a locker room cancer, regardless of what's happened.
Oh, well, no, it's also a diva wide receiver. Like, he's, you know, we don't want one of those. And it's like, yeah, you don't want a good player.
They got Eli Manning. They're good.
Oh, God. I'm awaiting the Adam Candy text message. Leave Elisha alone.
Me llamo Guillermo.
Le'Veon Bell signed with the Jets for 4 years and $52.5 million.
Before I get into the Raider side of this, I have a feeling you want to talk about Le'Veon Bell.
I think it's a... Especially with what they're doing at their offensive line, I think this could be an interesting signing. And
okay.
Also, good. He got his money.
I just thought Jared Justice might have Le'Veon Bell takes that you might want to get out of your system, like your usual Derek Carr takes you got to get out.
Since you've requested it, I think I've done better about not talking about what a horrible, inaccurate quarterback he is.
So, on the Raiders' side, the dream for Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown reuniting is dead. I hope this means Marshawn Lynch is coming back. Definitely should be on board for a one-year deal for whatever, a few million dollars for Marshawn Lynch. He's an old running back, but normally you don't want to sign old running backs. But if
except
you're giving
Frank
him,
Gore.
Except Frank Gore, who, I don't know, is going to take LeSean McCoy's thunder now. But with Lynch, like, if you're giving him 1 year, you know, there's no long-term commitment there, and you don't really have a good running back at the moment. So you conceivably, we're playing the what-if game with Lynch because he might just say, I don't want to play this football anymore. But conceivably, you'd be looking at Marshawn Lynch at running back, Doug Martin, Jalen Richard, Chris Warren, some combo of that behind him, Antonio Brown, Jordy Nelson at wide receiver. They probably still need to draft a wide receiver then, right?
I hope so.
I know Michael Gelkin of the Review Journal said they're interested in Tyrell Williams, who was a free agent from the Chargers last year. I don't think he's signed anywhere yet. They still need a tight end too, but they're not too far away from being solid at the skill positions. I mean, a year after Doug Martin, Jalen Richard, and Jared Cook were the only three guys that ever touched the ball, like, they're not too far away from being pretty decent at the skill position. So that's good for Derek Carr, and it makes it, you know, more likely that Derek Carr will look decent if you actually put decent players around him.
Did you think it was weird that whenever they sent out the promo picture of Antonio Brown, it was Antonio Brown with the blonde mustache dead center and Derek Carr and Jordy Nelson on either side of him?
Who else would you put? Is there a better option?
I'd probably put Marshawn.
Well, he's not on the team. I don't think you can. I'm just assuming.
Just put him in a suit and tie.
Okay.
Just not just a uniform.
Marshawn doesn't wear suits and ties either. Maybe, like, I don't know. I was going to say, who would you put on the defensive side of the ball? And there's not really an answer there either. Just put Trent Brown, the new offensive lineman. They gave him a bunch of money. Put him there.
Malcolm Subban has played 571 minutes this season.
He is 64th in the NHL in ice time for goalies.
That's good. I'm tired than I thought.
Fleury is first in the NHL.
Is Subban closer to the next guy than Fleury is to the second guy?
I believe so. Fleury has played 100 more minutes than the next highest used goalie. So Sean Tierney, who is at Charting Hockey on Twitter, he does goalie graphs, and he breaks it into three segments based on minutes played. And, like, he has one that's to compare all the starters, one to compare all the backups, and then a third one for just the stragglers. And Subban has played so little that he's the third stringer. Like, he's the backup goalie for the Golden Knights, but he's played so little he's the third stringer. But my favorite stats on Malcolm Subban are his home and road splits, because he's only started 12 games, 8 of those on the road, 4 of those at home, and I swear they're setting up to fail by playing him on the road all the time, because his save percentage at home is .930. His save percentage on the road is .889. He gives up 2.2 goals at home, 3.5 on the road. Like, his numbers at home, it's only 4 starts, but his numbers at home are like top 5 goalie in the NHL. His numbers on the road is a guy that you would send to the AHL. Like, it's such a dramatic difference. And, like, last year it wasn't quite as stark, but there's still a pretty big difference in what Subban does at home and on the road. So they need to actually play, like, when they're going to play him on back-to-backs and stuff, they need to do it when they're at home, because that's when he's good. And Fleury's actually, I think Fleury's numbers are actually better on the road this year than they are at home. So they've got this backwards. And when they get to the playoffs, they need to play Subban in the home games. How mad would that make people?
Oh, my gosh. But also, put Subban, if they pulled Subban for pulled Fleury for shootouts, how mad do you think people would be until Subban actually, you know, shut out the other team?
Well, Subban never gives up a goal, so they wouldn't be mad that long.
Yeah, exactly.
I think actually most people would be okay with it. I think most people know Subban.
We have a closer.
Yeah, unbeatable in shootouts. That's how it works. We've got Kathy Olivier. She's ready to go. We'll take a break and come back with the head coach of the Lady Rebels.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
A very big sports story is happening.
Tyler Bischoff is...
If a very big sports story was happening, we'd know it.
We do know it, we just don't understand it.
You don't understand it.
Technically Correct.
Kathy Olivier joins us, head coach for the Lady Rebels, as we are live from the Mountain West Tournament. We're on the concourse of the Thomas and Mack. The men's tournament starts right at 11 o'clock, right when we get done. It'll be Boise State and Colorado State. But Kathy Olivier with us.
Love this time of year, but I'm really mad that we're not in it. I got to be honest. And I know you're probably having a field day with that, Tyler.
Not a field day, but like, what happened?
You know, we had six seniors, and you thought this was going to be our year. We had three previous seasons of good basketball. It just wasn't our time. Every time I thought we were going to get on a little bit of a roll, we're healthy, we're good, it just didn't happen. I have to analyze the whole thing, and I just think we just didn't have enough offensive power, which was surprising to me because I thought we did.
Everybody loves college basketball this time of year, but it's got to suck to be one and done in it. Like, it's just got to be the worst.
It's horrible. You know, my family's been texting. They don't even know where to go with it. You know,
they don't know how to respond
no.
to you.
Jared, are you laughing right now? Because I don't think it's very funny.
Okay, sorry.
I mean, it's been bad. I've been a gamut of frustration, of emotions, I should say. I'm mad. I'm sad. I mean, these girls really did a lot for us, to be quite honest with you. These six seniors, they're stellar students. They're great in the community. They won us a boatload of games in the last 3 years. This year just wasn't our year. We just never got it going. We didn't have the mojo you needed, and we didn't have the offensive firepower that we thought we had.
Do you even remember having a team where Nikki Wheatley wasn't your point guard going into the year?
I mean, isn't that crazy? I asked her the other day, do you have another year? And she just looked at me. But, I mean, you know, she did some great things. She's a stud. We put the team on her back. She said, let's go, every day in practice. She had great energy. She worked her tail off. She was healthy this year. She had some big games for us. And, you know, we're sad to see her go.
So you lose six seniors. That means you've got a lot of spots to fill for next year. So what is coming in? What is next year looking like next year?
We lose six seniors, and we actually have the top, okay, I don't know what you're going to do with this, but it's a top 90 recruiting class.
Uh-oh.
And we have some talent coming in.
Where's that rank in the Mountain West? Top 90 nationally?
I want to say we were number one or Uh-oh. Two, because I want to say Boise State had a really good class too.
Boise State,
they just, you know, they keep getting shooters. And my mom goes, well, Boise State keeps winning. Maybe you need to look at how you're recruiting, Kath. And I thought, oh, gosh, here we go. My 84-year-old mother.
I want to have Kathy Olivier's family on.
You need to
tell me how much they tell Kathy what to do.
No, they do often. They ask me what I've been doing as far as free throws. Why aren't you practicing them? And I said, listen, we've shot over 25,000 free throws this year in practice, so don't tell me that.
So they're worse than regular fans, is what you're saying.
They're worse than regular fans. That's what made me good. I mean, a very athletic family. My brother went to SC on a baseball scholarship, won a national championship. My sister went to UCLA on a softball scholarship, won two national championships. I'm the only one who didn't win a national championship, but I did as an assistant coach. So I can kind of, you know, mess with them a little.
You're not completely left out in the cold on that one.
Correct.
So the women's tournament got moved up this year. So the championship game is actually tonight. I assume not you didn't play in the semifinals this year, but you like that just because you won't have semifinal games tipping off at 11:30 at night,
right,
like we saw in the past.
I think it's a great format. Again, Thomas and Mack, great environment in Las Vegas. There's a reason that there's so many conferences coming into Las Vegas and playing their tournament championship here. I just want us to be in the semis and be in the finals, so there's just more action for all the UNLV fans. I mean, our fans have been great, but Thomas and Mack, I went to the game yesterday because I felt like I had to, and sat up high and watched Boise State beat Fresno State in a very, very good game. And then the next game was, this is the women's games, of course. And then the next game was Wyoming against San Diego State and went into overtime. Really good games. I love that the championship is tonight at 7. And then the men's tournament starting now. I mean, I tried to get a parking place this morning. It was packed. There's a lot of action going on. And, again, it's about UNLV, and hopefully the men can make a run.
Kathy doesn't have a reserve parking spot?
No. I'm really mad about that, too. Why are you touching all my points right now? Just no, but I'm close enough where it's still good, so I'm okay.
I do enjoy that you said you watched the semifinal games yesterday because you felt you had to. You, like, self-punishing yourself is what you were doing.
Exactly. I sat up there, and I had Brandon, one of my assistants, come with me, and we just sat there and just talked about it and were angry about it. And I mean, again, you work so hard, and you do so much, and you go through all these practices, playing all these games. And then one day, boom, you lose and it's over. It was rough, and I just wasn't ready for it to be over. As much as people thought we were ready for it to be over, we weren't ready for it to be over.
The men play San Diego State tomorrow. They can take San Diego State, right?
You know, we got home in time to watch the end of the men's game against San Diego State at home in Thomas and Mack. And I think they're going to beat them. I do. I just think the men, you know, Coach Menzies does a great job of keeping good energy with his players, of making them believe that they can do it. And the guys have good relationships. They work hard. I thought Nick, you know, Nick's my guy for obvious reasons. I know you already know. But he's a bruiser, and he's a good defender. And if he does a job on that tall NBA guy, that guy's good. I don't know his name.
Jalen McDaniels.
Yes.
Okay. Nick Blair.
Okay.
For anybody unaware, Nick Blair is dating Katie Powell, who was one of Kathy Olivier's best players this year, one of those six seniors that's leaving. So every time you see Marvin Menzies, are you telling him you're welcome because Nick Blair suddenly was a great player in conference play?
No, I don't even go there. But I will tell you that I think Nick, not that we want to put their relationship on air, and Katie will probably kill me, but Nick has been great for Katie in a lot of ways. Katie has really gotten not smart, but she's organized now, and she's very she's using her time wisely, and her studies have and her grades have really kicked another level, and I think Nick has a lot to do with that. On the other hand, I think Katie has a lot to do with Nick playing more aggressive, doing more things on the basketball court when he got his opportunity. And he took advantage of that. I remember because Katie was listening to it. We were in New Mexico. No, we were home playing New Mexico. We just beat them, and the men were playing at New Mexico, and that's when Nick got his first little...
He went for 21, I think, in that game.
He went off, and Katie was screaming at her phone, watching the game, and it was great. I mean, I think they've been really good for each other, and I can't say enough positive things about
it. Well, so when Nick first played this year, it was like an emergency situation. They put him at center, even though he's...
Unreal.
From what he said, he's played, you know, small forward basically his entire life. So he's having to play center. And I went and asked him in one of the media availabilities. I was like, did Katie help you out? Did Katie give you any tips? And he was like, yeah, a little bit. She helps me, but she's like, she critiques me a lot too.
Oh, I love it. I mean, that's how Katie is. If you know Katie, Katie will let you have it. I mean, she's gonna say it the way it is. She's not going to sugarcoat things. And I think Katie's been great for Nick as much as I think Nick's been great for Katie.
All right, so when Nick goes for 20 tomorrow...
Oh, I'm going to go crazy.
You got to go find Marvin and just sort of nudge him in the ribs and say you're welcome.
I'm going to tell Marv he owes me. And hopefully we can figure out something for next year because Katie will be gone and Nick has another
does
year.
Does he owe you a walk-on player that is great. Going to be one of your best in conference play? Is that what he owes you?
He owes me someone that can get the job done because that is what Nick's doing right now.
I am so glad you are all on board, Nick Blair.
I'm so far on the Nick Blair team. It's not even funny. He's a great guy. He comes by the office, and you know, he's a rebel. He's from Las Vegas. He's so proud to be on this team, and that's a big part of being on either the Lady Rebels or the Running Rebels. You gotta love this city. You gotta want to do well for the city, and Nick's all about that.
So the Mountain West regular season, the schedule for the men's and the women's is basically opposites, where when the men are home playing San Jose State, you guys are at San Jose State. Do you hate that? Like, do you hate that you're always in the opposite city of when the men are playing?
I do. I'm a huge basketball fan. I always love rooting on the Running Rebels. I was psyched because, like I said, the San Diego State game, we played an afternoon game. We caught a flight immediately after the game. We came in here and we realized that we could catch the second half of the men's game, and it was great. I mean, again, you know, I know it's been a rough year for basketball here, and people recognize that the men are playing hard. I mean, they're playing hard right now. I thought the Rebellion was out in full force. The crowd was so supportive. Everyone was going crazy. It was a great game, and people are crazy not to come out and root on the Running Rebels for the Mountain West tournament because it's good basketball.
The men play tomorrow against San Diego. Jared, was Kathy during football season? Kathy's the one that nailed one of our score predictions, right?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So are
yes, I did. I was hoping you'd bring that up. You guys, I was on fire that week.
So wait, do you want to give us a score prediction for UNLV San Diego State tomorrow?
Oh, gosh. Okay, I didn't think that you were going to ask me that.
You weren't prepared to be put back to the test again?
No, I'm not prepared. What was the score? I went to that game, like I said,
here. It was, 60-59, I believe, the last time they
played? Okay, I think it's going to be a little higher. I'm going to say it's going to be 72-66 Running Rebels.
72-66. They're going to win by 6 points. Look at Kathy. That is a lot of confidence.
We're going to make our free throws. We're going to play the D. And we're going to hit some shots, so it's going to be a good game.
70. Do you want to give a very specific prediction of how many points Nick Blair scores?
Golly.
I mean, if you nail 72-66 at this point, that's just easy for you. So
I think Nick's going to hit double figures and go with 10.
10 points.
Yeah.
All right. That's good.
Which
that's a good
again,
prediction.
His job is to take care of business on the defensive end, and he knows that. And he likes that he has a job, and he's going to get it done.
Hit three threes, make a free throw, and he gets to 10 points.
There you go.
Is that the Nick Blair route to 10 points?
No, I don't think he's going to nail threes. I think it's going to be more. He's going to have a couple putbacks.
All right, offensive rebounds for Nick Blair.
He might hit one three because they're going to leave him open.
They do that.
Yes, and then a couple other like trash points and maybe hit a free throw to equal his 10.
That was the best part of Nick Blair's game against New Mexico, is that they legitimately just didn't guard him. They were like, who's this guy? We don't need to guard him. And he scores. Wait, have you ever been coaching against a team and like there's a walk-on on the floor and just light you up, and you're like, what the hell is that?
Listen, there's a reason freshmen do so well, because there's no scouting report on the freshmen, okay? So there was no scouting report on Nick, and he went off. I love it. You know what? I think it's great to be on the radio. You just act like you know everything, and you sound good. So
yeah.
That's
the key.
My job right now.
I'm
acting like
you know everything.
And I'm still so mad we're not in the tournament, so clearly I don't know anything.
No, you're good. You just act like you know everything, Kathy. That's
exactly.
All that matters.
Exactly. All right, so in the women's game, I know no one cares, but I'm going to say it anyway. I'm going to go with...
Okay, I know. I'm ready for this.
I'm going with Wyoming, actually.
Oh, an upset.
And they split, so Wyoming beat them at Wyoming, and then Boise beat them at home, but it was a really close game. I'm going to say Wyoming's going to beat them by 3.
By 3 points.
It's going to be a good game.
So the Boise's won the last two, and I think three of the last four on the women's side for this tournament. So you got a new team going to the NCAA tournament.
I have a new team. I think Wyoming, they didn't make a lot of their shots last night. I think they're going to make their shots, and I'm gonna take Wyoming. And if Gordy is listening, sorry, Gordy, because I know you're my buddy, but I'm going with Wyoming tonight.
Gordy Presnell, the head coach of Boise State. Is he your buddy?
Yeah, I mean.
Okay.
You know, the Mountain West has some great coaches. The Mountain West women's basketball side has some really good coaches. It's a different type of game than I'm used to in the Pac-10 way long time ago. But they have great shooters and great coaches. And Mountain West is tough. I know no one thinks that, but it's a tough conference. You have to go on the road to these schools that has all the altitude, and all you do is read about the elevation constantly, nonstop. And then the time change. I mean, it's the Mountain West road trips are rough.
You know what I really want? I really want Kathy Livier's mother's predictions for the games.
My mom would love that. My mom is 84, still plays tennis, and I guarantee you she's watching all the games. She's into it.
Would she nail the predictions? Or is she better at post-game yelling at you for something that went wrong?
She's better at post-game, to be quite honest with you. She's a fan. She's a big fan of her daughter, but she's a fan of the Lady Rebels, so you got to love it.
And likes to yell at Kathy Olivier when things go wrong. It's too bad. That's too bad.
Oh, man. You know, I do have to say, you have made it big. I love what you're doing on the radio. And Adam Candy now is making it big with ESPN.
Ridiculous, isn't it?
So all the people who are helping out the Lady Rebels along the way go big.
Everything funnels through the Lady Rebels. Is that what it is? That's the pipeline to becoming big. She's Kathy Olivier, the head coach of the Lady Rebels. Kathy, we appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. All right, let's have a good one, you guys.
Tyler Bischoff is
technically correct. The best kind of correct.
Thanks to Kathy Olivier, head coach of the Lady Rebels, for joining us. Their season ended at 12-18 and a loss in the quarterfinals of the Mountain West Tournament two days ago. So,
I kept waiting for you to ask her if she ever wondered what's going on inside Bischoff's briefs.
So, all right, I am going to betray Kathy Olivier. Before we went on air, she said she thinks the Manscaped commercials are hilarious.
Good.
Yeah, so we are going to do the Manscaped read now, which is the by far the best part of our show. Every day, I give you a look inside Bischoff's briefs. Have you ever wondered why it is so smooth? It is because of Manscaped.com. Whenever Bischoff's briefs get hairy, the Lawnmower 2.0 from Manscaped.com cleans it up. Their precision-engineered tools with skin-safe ceramic blades help avoid painful cuts inside Bischoff's briefs. So head to Manscaped.com and use code ESPN to get 20% off and free shipping. That is code ESPN at Manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping. All right, so I am going to give you... Are you ready for hacky radio? I already did outrage at the All-Mountain West team. Now I'm just going to go through a bracket and give you my picks. Isn't that tremendous radio, Jared?
Yay.
You
want to take calls next?
You are in love with this show today, aren't you?
Yep.
Okay. I got a fun fact for you, though, because I always have fun facts. You know it's going to be fun facts. 8 of the last 14 years of the Mountain West Tournament, the 1 and the 2 seed have met in the championship game. Do you know how boring that is? Like, last year we got the 5 and the 3 seed, so that was kind of fun. But for the most part, it's some combo of the top 4 seeds, and almost always, it is the 1 and the 2 seeds. But I don't care about your history.
Isn't that, like, how seeding's supposed to work?
Shut up, Jared.
Okay.
No, it's a tournament. They're supposed to be fun because it's single elimination and some stupid team wins a game and it ruins everything. That's the whole point of this thing.
All right.
So, here are your picks. This is what's going to happen. Boise State and Colorado State. This game is starting in 9 minutes. These are actually the two teams of the opening round that I think could actually upset someone. Like the rest of the teams in the opening round are all bad. But these are the two decent teams. Somehow they ended up... I don't know how Air Force and New Mexico had higher seeds than Boise State and Colorado State, because Air Force and New Mexico, not nearly as good. But I'm going to take Boise State. I think this is one of the toughest games to actually pick in this tournament, but I think Boise State will be better. New Mexico is going to beat Wyoming because Wyoming's no good, even though New Mexico just lost at Wyoming. New Mexico's going to win that game, and Air Force is obviously going to beat San Jose State because it's San Jose State. So, in the quarterfinals, Jared, here's your upset. Are you ready for this? Prepare yourself. Are you sitting down?
I am now.
Okay. Nevada and Boise State. Boise State's going to win.
What?
Thank you. That was the most appropriate reaction you could give me. Some fun facts on Boise State. They are 12-19 this year, but they are the fifth highest rated team in the Mountain West, according to KenPom. That is because a majority of their losses have been extremely close. They lost to Nevada by 1 point. They lost to Utah State in overtime, UNLV in overtime, Fresno State by 2 points, and New Mexico by 1 point. So what you're looking at Boise State is a team that is 9 points away from being 12-6 with wins over Nevada, Utah State, and Fresno State. They are 9 points away from having been the 3 seed in this tournament. And on the flip side, they only have one close win this season, and that was at Colorado State. KenPom has a luck rating. I hate the word luck, but it's basically, it just tells you which teams have won or lost a bunch of close games. So it's like, you know, this team's really efficient, but they lose a lot because they lose by 1 point. Or this team's not as efficient as you think. They just win a lot by 1 point. Boise State is the unluckiest team in the country by that metric. 353 out of 353. Basically what that means is there should be some regression to the mean. Will it happen in the Mountain West Tournament? That's sort of what my prediction is based off of. It probably happens next year, though. They're probably going to be much better than 12-19 next season. Because this is a team, despite being 12-19 in the 8th seed, they're in sort of the same ballpark as UNLV and San Diego State. Like, they're not in the same tier as Wyoming and New Mexico. They're more similar to UNLV and San Diego State. So counting on some regression, and I'm also counting on Nevada having a bad shooting day because that has to happen. UNLV and San Diego State, that's a tough one. I'll take San Diego State. Utah State, New Mexico, it's going to be Utah State. Fresno State's going to beat Air Force. There's nothing funny happening on that side. Boise State's going to beat San Diego State and go to the final. We're going to have an 8 seed in the final of the Mountain West Tournament. Everybody across the country is going to be terrified. Utah State, Fresno State's interesting. Utah State's actually played a weaker conference schedule than UNLV did, so there's a little bit of their 13-5 record that's getting propped up some. So I still think they win, though. I still think they're really good. I still think Cada and Merrill are a good enough two-man game to beat Fresno State, and then Utah State's going to win the tournament. And they're going to be in the NCAA tournament. They're going to beat Boise State, ruin Boise State's little magical run, and they're going to make the NCAA tournament for sure, just like St. Mary's upset Gonzaga. But thanks to Kathy Olivier for joining us. We'll be at the Thomas and Mac tomorrow as well. This has been Technically Correct.